we're back with another episode of the Geek Whisperers. I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Matt Brender.
This week, we are hitting on a favorite subject, and we're going to kind of go around the table talking about why content is important to each of us. We've been having a lot of discussions lately about content creation, and we consider ourselves content creators in some ways more than even social media marketers. So why that is and what's important to each one of us. So who wants to go first? Who's got a reason why they think content production is important and why they produce content?
I'm going to jump in, and I'm going to pull in external sources. So we'll have to link these in the show notes. I've been working with content creators for a long time. I've been a content creator. It's not that important, but most people don't know. I mean, I was a daily blogger at VMware for 2 or 3 or 4 years back in the aughties. Can you say that? What do you call those years? Back in 2005, 6, 7, 8. Anyway, back then.
I call those high school and yeah, never mind.
you're young baby Brender, just be quiet. So, so I was a daily blogger because there were no other bloggers at VMware. And so somebody had to blog and get content out and get, you know, start to assemble a community of people. But I'm going to link to two different things in the show notes. One is an article that recently came out from the Canadian Journalism Project. Journalism is currently going through, I'm going to connect all these, by the way. Journalism is currently going through kind of a crisis, as you may know, right? As ad dollars go down, the newspapers are imploding. And a lot of people are having to write for free. And journalism is asking itself, why are people having to write for free instead of being paid to write? And they did an little study in Canada, and they came up with this concept and this after going through this study of hope labor. And what they found is something that we over in IT see very clearly. And we could have told them this ahead of time, but they did their study. And the idea is they learned that journalists write for free because it's hope labor. They hope to get a job, right? And they hope to become prominent in social or use that as an online resume. And they have a whole kind of economic theory that since, you know, job loyalty and career paths, and we can't depend on a employer for life anymore. So you kind of, they back into the idea of a personal brand, but they don't call it that. But anyway, so I thought that was really interesting. One reason that we write and that we are content producers individually, and I'm speaking more individually, is that you're trying to get, you know, it helps your career. It helps you. It's an online resume. It helps you get a job. It helps show what you can do. It increases your visibility. Is that a bad reason to write? And I open that to the floor.
I think that's a genius reason. I know we talk a lot about career path here. And I think one of the fastest ways, you know, old school was you put a resume together. And in certain career paths, like you, I used to hire interns out of the journalism school, and they would have clippings files. You know, they would have an actual kind of book of things they could show me, a body of work. And I always thought that was very impressive. And I think in other fields, you would somehow have to cobble that together. But in today's world with LinkedIn and a million different things, SlideShare, YouTube, et cetera, there's so many different platforms. No matter what your content preference and where your comfort area is, there are so many ways to put your portfolio together that I think it's a must-have because it changes the conversation. It allows you to point to things you've already thought about and done. And I think that's incredibly useful and helpful to any employer. Again, just it kind of sets you apart. So if there's a choice between somebody who hasn't got this body of work and somebody who brings the clippings file, I remember my own hiring process. It was an impressive thing to have, and it helped me make decisions quickly.
Amen. Yeah, no, I'd have to really hit on the fact that it's a must at this point. And I think I can't emphasize that enough, actually, that no matter who I'm speaking with, no matter what their practice is, they are expected to be part of some online community. And I was actually just talking to a very close friend of mine who just doesn't believe in technology as much as we do. Yes, I do have friends outside of our group. And I'm just like, what do you do outside of your normal job of pursuing a nursing degree? And she didn't go into it in detail. And then she's finally like, well, I'm actually top rated on this rock climbing community. for like having these routes that I've mapped all throughout the West. I'm like, why isn't that on your resume? It's like, that has nothing to do with being a nurse. I'm like, that has everything to do with you, though. And getting that interview and having that sit-down opportunity is about interviewing with you and your unique opportunity for them, not just your degrees, not just your job paths. So I think there's an expectation of that, and there's still just such a mental hesitance to show that side of yourself, that more personal side of your brand, in this corporate world.
There's probably a separate conversation to have, things you should or should not put on your resume. But I agree, when you Google somebody, it's nice to show up as well around it.
Yeah, but I mean, really, those unique points, though, I can't stress them enough that I find them interesting.
Yeah, leave the interest paragraph off your resume. But that's yes, that's a whole separate conversation. I have a second link that I want to share with everybody too. I'm going first, and then we can go around. The second link is a link to Patio 11, is one of the heroes of Hacker News. Apologies, but he wrote a good article on why I do not end the week with nothing. And it's talking to developers who might be working internally at a company. And he built himself a consulting practice in his own small software business. And people asked him, how did you, I'll just read from it. Somebody asked me recently how I managed to stay motivated to work he was working 90 hours a week. He says from the 91st through the 95th hours every week on my own personal projects. And the answer was, I wanted to end the week with something. So his advice to everybody was, end the week with something. And for him, it's, you know, work on an open source project, work on a writing project, work on some way, or try to get involved in projects that have externally facing deliverables. Because, you know, it's not quite fair, but if you're only working on internally facing stuff, it's just really hard to get people's attention.
That is an incredibly powerful statement. And I think about the fact that we live in a world where so much of a lot of what a lot of us do is, you know, knowledge worker, and you don't have a thing at the end. There's not a house that you've built. There's not a car that you fixed. There's not this physical thing. And how powerful that is. That's really cool. It's a great driving statement.
Yeah, getting beyond the invisibility of your knowledge work and contributing in some way that has some sense of permanence or visibility along with that permanence.
Yeah, it makes it real. Exactly what you said, Matt, that to take your knowledge and make it real in some ways. And it's so I come from publishing. I know we've talked about this before, but good old-fashioned book print publishing. And one of the satisfying things about that career was that at the end of the day, something was created. You know, there was a thing, it had an end. And exactly that. I mean, one of the reasons I think that format endures is that we want to document. We have this human drive to document, and knowledge is ephemeral until you write it down.
Yeah. And Amy, to piggyback that idea, I think the new version, or at least the alternative to picture or it didn't happen, is basically blog post or you don't know it.
Yeah.
This idea that if you know something, you should be codifying that in this open forum of technology blogs and making sure others can learn that from you. Mm-hmm. And that builds your brand. Yes, it's free labor in a sense, but it's really kind of investment in your future.
Yeah, well, yes. And the strategic, again, I know I've pointed to this before too, but something John has certainly taught us as fellow Geek Whisperers is the power of naming. Give it a name. You create something and make it real and naming it and sort of creating deliverables, something physical around it, if you will, even if that physical is, you know, a blog post, et cetera. But maybe it's you document it in a SlideShare, a PowerPoint, and post it to SlideShare. Maybe you, again, medium matters less than documentation, naming it, owning it. You create a program from it, and it stops being a conversation you had over beers, and it starts to being, you know, an idea that is worth funding, whether it be a marketing idea, a tech idea, et cetera.
I love it.
The other thing I wanted to point out, Amy, was notice his point is make something every week.
I like that too.
It's sustained. It goes back to your influence diet piece.
Yeah, you can't build that muscle. And I'm ashamed that recently I had to park my food blog, and that was part of my discipline, is writing that every week. And I've tried to then transfer the discipline to other forms of content production on that basis. And I made the joke today that I feel like I'm like old school radio programs, where I insist that we do this on a schedule, but I think it's better to aspire and slip a little bit than to not try to do something. You know, muscle memory. You build the muscle memory. You do your push-ups every day. You do your writing or your recording or your coding. You know, GitHub is as legitimate an output production, whatever it is that's your thing.
Are you kidding me? A GitHub account name and Stack Overflow accounts. Two first things that most developers are getting asked when they're showing up to the job. Like, okay, you want a job. What have you done? It doesn't matter that you're just coming out of college or you're still in college and you're looking for an internship. It's, well, show me that you've done something beyond your own cranium. That's the expectation today. So it's very powerful. And I think the quotes you noted, John, are dead on in that way.
Well, I want to jump in here and say, I love the part where this part is in some way self-serving, like we've talked about, because it shares your knowledge, it promotes you in your career. If we're going to do another element of why publish or perish, I would say something that one of our fellow podcasters in the industry, Brian Gracely, taught me, very simple rule of thumb. If you're asked a question more than three times, document the answer and point to the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's good.
It has a wonderful effect of lowering your workload, scaling you out. I have a friend who does this on a mailing list. I will keep people's names out of it, but the lazy web is evident all over the place. And he basically cuts and pastes response back into this mailer that I've been answered a million times, which I think is kind of genius. It's the same. In some ways, he's created that database of answers that people won't go seek in another kind of knowledge base, but kind of turn to the mailer, ask the same question again. So cut, paste, cut, paste, cut, paste.
Yeah. And Amy, I want to just give a practitioner tip right there, that when I'm advising people to start a blog and they're like, well, I have nothing to produce, the very first thing I ask them to do is just to take 15 minutes a day, go through their email and see if there's something that they wrote more than two or three paragraphs about. I guarantee that could be a great blog post. All they have to do, they have to anonymize the topic. Maybe they need to avoid customer conversations, but they edit that down a little bit, and I bet they dropped some significant knowledge pieces that will resonate with others. So that idea of showing, like, ending the week with some real work, you can do that from just working through the questions you're answering every day, like Brian suggested and like you do with your blog.
It's been amazing. And you know, insider's tip that I think we often, ways we come up with what to talk about on this podcast are questions we've wrestled with in the previous weeks, months, et cetera, questions that our listeners bring to us. And it's been a very effective way to document and then use this as content piece that we can point listeners to and say, yeah, we have talked about that. I have been thinking about that.
Well, I mean, this works for a personal channel, personal output. We kind of have two audiences here. One of them are these people who are, I mean, let's call them unicorns or technical marketing, technical enthusiasts, technologists who also, want to communicate. Another part of our audience are marketers. How does this translate into a corporate context?
I think for the corporate context, this is that elusive word of mouth layer. What I've been sort of referring to as the Amazon review layer that everyone craves. That again used to be truly word of mouth and a bit more ephemeral. And now has become more well documented. So somebody in, you know, Miami, Florida's word of mouth could influence my home router purchasing decision because they've got a review up on Amazon. And I think even though we're not necessarily working in consumer goods here, that same thing applies, that we provide a community of trusted advisors, those citizen analysts. So for our marketers who want to do this at scale, it is so important to provide opportunities for your influencers, for that often technical decision-making audience to document, and for you to be able to share that content out. And it could be any number of things. Again, it could be a corporate blog platform that you encourage guest bloggers. It could be using social platforms or channels to amplify content that the influencers are putting on their own. It could be video vehicles, podcasts. Again, the format is less important than you're providing, making it simple, a simple exchange, a simple value exchange, that you provide a format, either a format to document the content and assistance in content production or amplification. So either one of those things is an amazing value add for most influencers. And they're willing to trade you then their time, their knowledge, their expertise, if you can provide either, again, that content production system or amplification pipes.
Yeah, I think sometimes when marketers think of user-generated content, which was a term of art, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago when people came up with that, they think of that as like Amazon reviews or Reddit, or, you know, just wild and crazy, and you have no control, and you're just letting people upload Doritos commercials or whatever. And what you actually just laid out actually was much more sophisticated. It's actually a structured method to let people who could be employees, fellow employees, they could be external folks, to help, collaborate with you and create content, create messages.
I think that's the secret sauce. And again, it's you give it a name, you create a program, and you tweak it. So if you have, if you take on the burden of logistics, and we all have too much to do. So if you, on the corporate side, take on that task, then a lot of people will show up because they've got the creativity, they've got the energy. And again, you get options. So some folks prefer to control their own dials. It's the difference between somebody who wants to use a Linux box or a Mac OS, right? You either want to twiddle the dials or you like it to be done for you. And no harm, no foul in either, no judgment here. Provide two channels or two avenues, if you will, the bifurcated path, and you're going to get a lot of success.
Is this making sense to you, Brender?
Dead on. Genius. No, okay.
I get that a lot when I pay $20 for it. So what about you, Matt? You've got a great blog that you run. You're also on the other side of it. What's in it for you in terms of content?
Yeah, I think there's this sense of urgency that keeps me coming back to it. That it's very easy for me to think that I have plenty of other things to do and I won't have time to blog this week. And if I look at the things I want to get done and the time allotted, that it really seems like a logical excuse if I get some writer's block. But I think the important thing would be to just that you need to get beyond that. Taking a note from a past guest with Chris Wall, how he took a topic absolutely having nothing to do with technology about how nachos are delicious, and then making that be a vessel to deliver an idea about how IT should be more like nachos. I mean, just finding just sometimes absurd analogies to stretch your imagination around a topic and taking the time to write it down. I find it difficult unless you schedule it. And there's going to be nothing that's more important to you outside of your day job. And it's going to improve your day job, too, because you're going to be working on things and skills to that you bring with you no matter where you are in your day.
Well,
so it's really the get beyond the the fear of not producing content and just produce it?
Well, two things there. I think that one of your superpowers is programmatizing that. You're very good at using the tools at hand, Asana, other program management tools, Evernote, et cetera, to organize so that you capture these small ideas and take it to the content level. So that's one thing. Like, kudos to you. And I think that's a skill I want to work on and highly recommend to the listeners if they don't have that discipline yet. Hit Matt up on Twitter or read some of his blogs because he does really good stuff with that. And the second thing to the urgency point is I really think you've hit on something there, that in the day and age where we have so many opportunities and outlets for content production, that one of the great values of the style of content that a lot of us produce and are engaged with, like, again, this technical decision maker, kind of the moment, citizen analyst type content, is that we can get to market faster. So as opposed to going through multiple kind of corporate spin cycles, et cetera, you can respond in the marketplace, be it, a break fix prevention because you put a blog out on it or engage on a community board discussion or, any numbers of kind of real world examples that quick to market, that quick turn has enormous benefit for customers, for you personally. I can just see a lot of positives there.
Yeah. Yeah. What were you going to say, John?
Oh, I was going to jump in on the urgency thing. I think that's genius. I'm putting on my corporate hat and so much of that stuff, so much of the work product that comes out that is a little more traditional is not urgent. And, somebody told me we were being too negative on this podcast. So I don't like to make too much fun of people because I'm really a gentle and caring and accepting soul. I take all comers, right?
More than the two of us.
But damn. So let's think about this. The kind of content we're talking about is urgent and is agile. I almost think that we're comparing like a waterfall approach to an agile approach where,
oh my gosh, spot on.
We're very used to, a blogging approach is very agile. Think up something, write it. I was listening to one guy on Twitter a few weeks ago say, yeah, they were asking him how he does blogging or how he is able to blog so much. He's like, if it takes me more than an hour, I don't do it, right? If I get stuck, I leave it, right? I don't sit there for 5 hours with it. Yep. And then I look at the way content marketers approach it or some internal marketing content campaigns. Now, some of this is not fair, right? Because sometimes if you are NASA, and you are launching a Saturn V rocket, you need thousands of people working on it. You need to double check everything, every line of code, every bolt, every procedure. And so if you are launching a giant multi-million dollar ad campaign and it's going to be localized into 46 different languages and it's going to run for 2 years and you're going to spend $200 million on it and it's going to be in the Wall Street Journal and the Times of London and it's really – there you need to check every screw and you need to check every fuel line. But so much of what sometimes marketers do is they approach little tiny jobs in the same way. And this is not a Saturn V rocket. And this is barely a dune buggy, right? It's like a bicycle. Before you get on the bicycle, you come up with all the messaging documents and you get your bullet points and there's committee meetings and there's, especially if two companies are involved, you're trying to do something joint. You have, you have squared the bureaucracy and we used to joke about that, a blog post would get a little life sucked out of it, but I see it happening. I also see people wanting to put it all in a box before it even launches, right? Let's figure out everything we're going to do before this campaign launches. And what we're discovering more and more, even for acts of marketing, is that you put out a lot of chips on the roulette wheel and then you double down when it's working.
I like you, John. And yeah. And you talked about, you made reference to two different development strategies, the waterfall where like you start with this idea and you build it up and build it up and you're going to deliver on that idea at the end. And it's going to take a certain amount of time, no matter what. And then the more, adopted of recent, the agile approach where you iterate on a minimum viable product and then you iterate and you just keep improving and building and testing as you go so that you don't get stuck in a cycle at all. And I can't emphasize enough how much blogging and good content creation is more agile than it is waterfall. And we treat it as this giant waterfall. It must be perfect when it comes out, no matter what. When really, I can tell you, I've had no more powerful moment in my personal or professional life than when somebody messaged me and told me, I've been reading your blog regularly and I'm embarrassed that you just wrote the last blog you did. It wasn't good. And here's why. And it was honestly one of the hardest moments I've had in the tech industry. And I had the fortitude to say thank you to that person for telling me so that I could improve upon what I had produced, because my idea of what was minimally viable for a blog post had gotten a little too low for my audience. And I had the good fortune of somebody telling me that instead of just not reading anymore. So like you have to both have some thick skin and also just keep producing and not stop when you have some form of conflict, some sort of issue that should inspire you to produce more, not less.
Yeah. Amy, we talked a little bit about the content crunch last time. There's so much content, getting people's attention is hard. How do you think, both from your marketing hat and from your unicorn hat, do people approach quality versus quantity and pre-planning versus just going with the flow? I mean, what do you think?
Again, I think it's a great crossroads, and there is some tension between the strategies, but I think there are ways to resolve. So, number one, for any marketeer or marketing team out there listening, please do not incentivize tonnage when it comes to content measurement. If you reward the behavior of how much content is produced, and the problem is that's an easy thing to count. We produce 17 pieces of content. And you know, the average consumption rate was dot, dot, dot. But often the consumption rate isn't even measured as much as the speed with which the tonnage was produced. And I think that incents the wrong behavior. I really do. Number two, I think that some of the traditional PR strategies, and understandably, we've already picked on our brethren and sistren in PR, probably adequately, but I think some of the traditional approaches, and understandably, are a day of, so they're very timed. And like you said, they need to be very buttoned up beforehand so that the strategy can roll out elegantly and on message and on point and in sync. Influence marketing is a lot messier, but we're also, you know, we've talked about this before. If traditional is kind of one big splash moment in time with a goal of sending the ripple out as far as possible, we're 1,000 pebbles. And so we're messier. We're smaller, we're messier, but we're leaner. So I think that you have to find a way to work in concert and let different people on the team play to each of their skill sets. For people who really enjoy that kind of deadline pressure and that organization, let them be successful in that, because that's important air cover. Create other vehicles where you have some flexibility and freedom so that you can enjoy the discovery that comes. And enjoy might be used loosely because it's not always a fun process. But it gets back to what I said before. I think that when you create frameworks, don't have a preconceived notion, to Matt's point. Create frameworks and let the content flow through them, which will, when you are running the framework, you can exercise some editorial control and influence, but that's about all you can hope for.
Yeah.
Can I give another practitioner tip, Amy?
Please.
Yeah, so not too long ago, I took a leap of faith and allowed a few people I know to be regular contributors to my personal blog, which is a whole other topic. But just the way I've been running it is basically they can put forth an idea and it's in their name and it's on their personal profile on the website. But it doesn't get fully published until it goes through me. So I kind of help them do some content cleanup. I tend to talk about the flow of it and add some pictures to give it some more meat to it. And it's been a really interesting process. to have some editorial control of someone else's creativity. But that control is actually given those individuals a lot of opportunity to feel more comfortable in a medium they're not comfortable with, which is blogging. And it's given me a great way to get more great content from people that I trust on the website. And I think that is a microcosm of what professional marketers who are trying to manage complex blogs have to do, is help people get from blogging as an idea to blogging as a practice, but not tell them exactly what they should and should not be blogging about. John, you have way more experience with this than I have. I mean, what's your take on it?
Well, but I have to jump in. Sorry, I have to cut in and make...
Do it.
I think we are the personal trainers of content creation sometimes.
As long as I'm not Richard Simmons.
Well, no, I'm doing rehab for my knee right now. And I have to say it's an on-point comparison that we can be both kind and and overbearing all at the same time.
Well, it is funny how much it comes down to finding that balance, right? You got to exercise your knee, but you can't overdo it. You've got to, you know, if you come out with 17 pieces of content at once, that's probably too much, and they probably are not very interesting. But we are talking about, you know, pebbles. If you have to still have to show up. I have certain people that want to show up once a quarter, and you're like, well, that's not really showing up then, is it? And they think they want to show up once a quarter, and they end up showing up once a year. And then they wonder why they're not getting any attention. So it's all about this balance.
It's that influence diet concept. It's funny how it just keeps coming back. Things that we know are good for us to, you know, eat our Wheaties every day or whatever it is, or, you know, do our 10 jumping jacks. Same is true in our writing discipline or content creation.
The other thing I was struck by was before we got on the air here, we were talking about content marketing and just in general and the kind of the buzzword. And we were looking at an article and we were trying to see if we could talk about it. And it was really written about from the basis of a marketer who was about to speak to someone. And it was all about, he said some stuff about knowing your audience and things like that. But it really was coming from a real command and control perspective. And I don't know, our most successful communications that I've had professionally, both professionally, personally, and professionally, you know, have been much more about conversations with people. It just somehow comes out better. If I don't know, I'm just tired of people telling me things. I just tune it out.
Time when we're talking about sort of as a closing thought, when we talk about content creation, I think one of the cool things as we scale out and we get to know so many people is when you produce content, either enable others to be successful, enable unicorns, or produce content yourself. And I recommend both whenever you have the opportunity. You allow people to know you, to engage you kind of more meaningfully, more quickly. So to your point, John, you get to that person faster maybe if you can know them through their works. It's not a cold call anymore.
Oh, I like that. It's about relationship building. My God.
Yeah.
We have nothing left to say. We just say the same thing over and over again.
Well, one counter to the influence diet on this blogging front, it goes against your normal practice, Amy, that you can actually do 100 push-ups in a night and see benefit for months. That what's really nice about blogging as a medium is that if you do just have a burst of motivation, you can crush out 2, 3, 4 blog posts, use your platform to schedule it out. I use WordPress, and you know, I might not write something for a month, but I have something coming out twice a week for the next month. You can have those moments. I think they're rare enough where you shouldn't count on them, but we can plan for such things. So when we talk about the practice of this, it doesn't have to be this fear that if I start it, if I miss this day or that day, it all falls to pieces. But there should be a sense of urgency, And that urgency can be aggregated as time allows, and it could be, you know, it can be missed occasionally without much harm.
The day we come up with a way to schedule push-ups, let me know, because I'm going to sign up.
Me three.
So I really like the way this conversation has gone. Again, I feel like I've come away with some inspiration, some tips, and I think we all need it. It is, as content creators and enablers, it is hard. And I think having that light at the end of the tunnel and thinking about it as a discipline and thinking about it as the satisfaction of it instead of the work is a great attitude, adjustment, a tweak. So glad you brought that into the mix, John.
Attitude adjustment. I like it. I like it too. So content, publish or perish, get off your ass every day, and be a friggin' human being. That's mine.
And reach out. Reach out to others. They'll inspire you. You'll inspire them. It's a very good circle to be stuck in.
Yeah. Create your own portfolio. Don't leave the world to create it for you.
It's not going to.
I think that's some great final lessons.
So this was the last Geek Whispers you'll ever hear?
We summed it up. I mean, I do have some challenges with the word content, but I'll leave them for another time.
Ooh, that sounds juicy. I look forward to that one. All right. Well, you have listened to another episode of the Geek Whispers. If you like what you hear, we would appreciate a review. Review us up on iTunes. Leave us some stars. Sprinkle about some love wherever you happen to listen to us or hear us. We always like to hear from you, and we look forward to talking again next week.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as Jay Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
Back in the oddies. Can you say that? What do you call those years? Back in 2005, 6, 7, 8. Anyway, back then.
I call those high school and... Yeah, never mind.
You're, young baby Brender, just be quiet.